Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. The East African nation of Kenya has long been a beacon of stability and relative prosperity in a tumultuous region of the world. That reputation was undercut back in 2007 after a disputed election led to ethnic violence that killed as many as 1,400 people. Now, a decade later, the country is on knife's edge again. In elections in August, incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta was declared the winner by 9 percentage points over longtime opposition leader Raila Odinga. Odinga challenged the results before the country's Supreme Court. To the surprise of many, the court annulled the results, citing irregularities in the counting process and mismanagement by the election board. A new election was to take place October 26, but just this week, Odinga, the opposition leader, said he would pull out of the new poll because the electoral board had not made sufficient reforms to carry out a free and fair election. Now his supporters have taken to the streets in the capital Nairobi and the western city of Kisumu, and some fear that without a compromise, Kenya is headed for another major outbreak of violence. On this edition of Global Journalist, a look at Kenya's political crisis. In a few minutes, we'll hear from three guests who have been tracking events in Kenya closely. But first, we're joined from Nairobi by Mercy Odhiambo. She's a reporter for The Standard, one of Kenya's biggest newspapers. Mercy, welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be a part of the group that will be discussing the situation that's going on in Kenya.
Well, you've been reporting on Kenyan politics for some time now. Tell us just a little bit about the mood, the environment in Nairobi today.
The environment in Nairobi keeps shifting because this is the only time, I think, in the political scene where we've had such uncertainty going on. At one moment, things seem to be very hopeful, and then it's overtaken by events, and then something else builds up. And I can tell you for sure, as a media house, we are now in a state of confusion, because even us as the media, it seems like we are losing grip of what is going on in the political scene. One moment, everything seems to be going on very fine, and then something else happens, and it's just one event after another.
Now, as we mentioned, opposition leader Raila Odinga has said he would not participate in the new elections scheduled for the end of October. I understand that there have been some demonstrations in Nairobi and other cities in Kenya as well. Tell us about those.
Yeah, there have been demonstrations, especially in Nairobi. Yesterday, I think we saw one of the biggest groups of people coming out. To some of them were in support of Raila. Others were, you know, telling Raila to stop all these hard stance that he's been having since we had the general elections on August 8th. And it's been a series of events happening. Yesterday, we saw police throwing tear gas at people who were demonstrating. And I think someone else was reported dead in some parts of Western Kenya. So this is a situation that we've been having since Raila made his announcement yesterday. It was a very unexpected announcement, especially for people who are hoping that this would be an election that would change things in terms of seeing whether Raila won or Uhuru won. This was going to be an election that would have projected Kenya in a different perspective because of what had happened earlier. It's the first time, I think, in the history of Africa that a presidential election is nullified and people have to go back to the polls. So this was going to be a very historic election just by its own nature. So everything happened in an unexpected way. So it was a bit obvious that some people were going to take to the street when Raila said that he's pulling out of the race, especially because his other supporters and the people close to him have always used the demonstration way to show displeasure.
Well, let's rewind for a moment to 2007, when there was a lot of political tension over a disputed election. I think more than 1,400 people were killed, something like 600,000 people were displaced. Many observers at that time thought Odinga may have won that election, but his opponent, Mwai Kibaki, was declared the winner. You were reporting, I understand, in Kisumu,
yes,
a hotbed of,
yes,
Odinga's support then. Tell us about what you saw then, and do you feel like there are any parallels to what's happening now?
Interestingly, when that happened exactly 10 years ago, I was very young. I think I must have been 20 years old. And I was also very new in journalism. And I did not know how to cover that magnitude of loss and that magnitude of political heaviness at that time. And then another coincidence that happened this year, I was placed in Kisumu. I also covered elections in Kisumu. So it has been, Kisumu has in the history being an election opposition zone. So it was expected that the people of Kisumu would back up Raila through and through, regardless of his position in politics. So when I covered Kisumu in 2007, it was a bit spontaneous. I would say the violence that time was spontaneous because I think they had too much hope on Raila and they did not anticipate that rigging would happen, if at all it did. I am not in a capacity to say it was rigged, but they were so hopeful. I think they were too hopeful that it was going to be Raila, that when it was not Raila, they were too disappointed and they took to the streets and there was mass murder. Some people lost their homes. Women were raped. It was a horrific time for us as a nation and also a defining time for us to, as the media now, to reshape how we were going to run news. Because like I said, at that time, I would speak for myself and say I was very naive and we were doing the conveyor belt journalism where you just report what has happened. And we did not know that we were in some way instigating the war. And now this time when we covered it, I think we also censored ourselves too much from the lessons of 2007, that we were not able to ask questions that perhaps would have led the nation in a different direction, because this time we were too careful. I will say that.
And so do you get the sense that there's some determination, not just on the part of the press, but on the Kenyan public, not to go down that path of ethnic violence again? Or do you see that there are some signs that this could happen?
It's kind of double-edged. It's very difficult to give a defining answer on that. First of all, because at that time, social media was not so active as it is this time. And with social media, even though the mainstream media, that's the Standard Group and other media houses, are trying to control themselves and saying we cannot report this based on ethics and based on reason, but social media is not allowing us to be quiet. So it can either be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on where you sit. But in 2007, I think the social media networks were not so active. So everyone depended on mainstream media. And that's where things went wrong because there was no control. It was either what mainstream media says or what people feel. So this time we have social media, which is coming in between. And we have debates outside mainstream media where people can come out and say, hey, this is not true. Or, hey, this is what Raila needs to do. This is what Uhuru needs to do. So we are having conversations outside mainstream media.
Well, Mercy, and I think it's a good thing. Our time grows short, but I did want to ask you, what sorts of pressures are there on journalists like you covering politics in this type of environment?
First of all, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on air, but journalists in Kenya are not paid very well. And that's where the weakness comes in, because politicians know that journalists are not paid well. So they compromise journalists. And sometimes the things that appear on the media are really tainted with corruption based on what the politicians have paid the journalists. So that's one thing. And then for me now, in terms of security, I was in Kisumu. I think I was the only woman who was covering Kisumu for the mainstream media. And it reaches a time where you have to choose whether you want to cover this or you want to just hide so that you do not get caught in between the tear gas, the gunshots and everything. So I will say security. I would also say journalists are being compromised. And the other thing is that who owns the media in Kenya? It's the politicians who do. So they basically drive the agenda of what we report.
Well, Mercy Adhiambo, stay safe. Thank you so much for joining us on Global Journalist.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking with you.
A reminder that you're listening to Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the remarkable turn in events in Kenya, where the country's Supreme Court annulled the results of its August election, only to see the loser on that ballot pull out of a new election scheduled for later this month. To broaden our discussion, we're going to bring in three other people who have been following the situation closely. Joining us in Nairobi is Catherine Harald. She's the East Africa Bureau Chief for Reuters. Also in Nairobi is Nanjala Niabola. She's a political analyst and journalist who has written for news outlets including The Guardian and Al Jazeera. And in Washington, D.C. is John Campbell. He's a former U.S. diplomat who is now Senior Fellow for African Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Welcome to all of you. Catherine Harald, if we could start with you, remind us just a bit about the background of the two candidates in this election. They both come from dynastic Kenyan families, I understand.
That's right. In some ways, this is quite personal. The president, Uhuru Kenyatta, is the son of the first president of Kenya, and the opposition leader, Raila Odinga, is the son of the first vice president of Kenya. Raila Odinga's father had wanted to be president, but never quite managed to succeed. He later fell out with Kenyatta and started his own party, and his son has always wanted to finish what his father started.
And Nanjala Niabola, I understand also that there is a significant ethnic dimension to this sort of political conflict. Tell us just a bit about that.
Well, it's complicated. I think that it's difficult to label anything starkly ethnic or starkly not ethnic. Of course, both candidates do draw significant support from the backgrounds, from their individual ethnic backgrounds, simply because of the way in which society is structured in Kenya. Ethnicity, ethnic networks are important to people's social economic advancement. And the person who wields the most power within that network obviously ends up exerting a great deal of influence. So both Kenyatta and Odinga do wield a significant amount of support from their particular ethnic backgrounds. However, there are 44 ethnic groups in Kenya, and both Kenyatta and Raila represent only two out of those 44 groups. Some of the other influences that are in there, like our proximity, are historical relationships. For example, the historical relationships between the Somali community, Kenya's indigenous Somali community, and the what we'd call the metropole, the communities that are based in the south. I think it's also worth pointing out that despite all of the ethnic dimensions and the ethnic complications, both Raila and Kenyatta are actually friends. They've known each other for a long time. I believe they're only related by marriage. I think a Kenyatta cousin is married. Odinga cousin. And so in as far as ethnicity is an issue, it's also not an issue. So patriarchy is also an issue to consider. This idea that the both of them see themselves as big men and are fighting for the crown.
Well, John Campbell, if I could turn it to you, this decision by the Supreme Court of Kenya to annul the results of the election in August took a lot of people by surprise. Why was that?
Well, I think part of the reason was that both foreign and domestic election observers had spoken quite favorably of the process. And indeed, the actual day of the polling, things seemed to go well. But what the Supreme Court found were irregularities in the tabulation of the vote count. So in other words, the voting went well, but there were difficulties with the tabulation. The court was extremely clear, I think, in that it did not find that the winner, Uhuru Kenyatta, had rigged the elections. Rather, it found fault with the way the elections had been conducted by the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission.
Well, Catherine Harald, if I could turn that point to you then. John Campbell did raise this issue of the Independent Electoral Boundaries Commission that had conducted the first election. Odinga said, immediately after the court decision, he would not run again unless there were significant reforms and changes to that commission, to how the vote was conducted. What has happened since then?
Well, Odinga has wanted some of the officials that he holds responsible for these irregularities to be fired by the election board, and they haven't done that. So this is the reason that he's given for not running again. I do think it is important that the court didn't say rigging happened here. As journalists, including myself, have been repeatedly asking the opposition, can you show us any place that there was rigging? Can you name a polling station? Can you tell us a constituency? We'd love to track it down. We'd love to investigate it. so far, nobody has been able to stand up and say the rigging happened here. And Kenyatta was supposed to have won by 1.4 million votes. But the process is what was criticized. And Odinga's people say it's madness to do the same thing again and again and expect a different result.
So if I understand correctly, it sounds like this election that was nullified, it sounded like it may have been a fairer, more clean process than previous Kenyan elections that were not nullified. Is that fair to say?
That's setting the bar pretty low.
I'm sorry.
Nanjala, go ahead and jump in.
I just wanted to jump in and say I don't think that's exactly accurate. Part of the reason why the procedure was so important in this Kenyan election was because in 2007, what did trigger off the violence was concerns about the procedure. So what happened in 2007 was that people, once again, the vote was perfectly calm. Every vote in Kenya going back to 1992 has always been calm. It's, voting has never been the problem. And then when we got to tallying, what people, returning officers across the country, were changing the results that were being announced at the polling stations before submitting them into the National Tallying Center. And in fact, there was a moment on live television where a returning officer from the back and announced, these people are cooking results here in the back. And he was swiftly shut down. He was grabbed off the dice by security operations. And in fact, that man has never been seen or heard from again. So what happened as part of the political settlement that came out the 2007 post-election violence was something called the Kriegler Commission. And in that commission, they identified tallying, vote tallying, as a big part of why elections go wrong and why elections in Kenya trigger violence. And so it's actually built, that's why it's built into the constitution in Kenya. That's why it's built into the election law so strongly that tallying has to be transparent, has to be electronic, has to be, all of these things are set in stone in law. And so what the court said was not that they were irregularities, was that they were illegalities.
Illegalities in the sense that the electoral board didn't follow its own procedures that it was supposed to follow.
They did not follow their own laws. And it rises to the level of constitutional law. It wasn't just statutory law. It was actually constitutional law because our constitution has a chapter on elections and how elections must be conducted. 2 days before the election, we had one third of all, we were supposed to have an electronic election. So all results were supposed to be transmitted digitally. And 2 days before the election, the commission announced that one third of all polling stations would not be transmitting results electronically. That's illegal. So it wasn't really just a question of, oh, these people didn't do things the way we wanted them to, but it's okay. It was actually a question of, was there manipulation of the tallying system? Was there manipulation? And recall that the results that the IEBC announced on August 11th were vastly different from what was being reported on media throughout the tallying week. There was the court, in fact, in many occasions during the court proceedings, they said, why were the results on which the final announcement was made so vastly different from what you had been reporting throughout the entire week? And it raised questions about, we're supposed to have this tallying system. It's supposed to be transparent. It's in the Constitution. Why wasn't it used?
A reminder that you're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. We're talking about the political standoff in Kenya, where the country's Supreme Court recently annulled the results of its August election and called for a do-over. Now, the new poll was slated to take place October 26, but its future is now in doubt after the main opposition candidate, Raila Odinga, pulled out of the poll saying it would be less fair than the August election. We're joined by Catherine Harold of Reuters, the Kenyan journalist and analyst Nanjala Niabola, as well as by John Campbell of the Council on Foreign Relations. If you're interested in more underreported international news and human rights issues, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read our recent interview with Patrick Gathara, a provocative Kenyan cartoonist. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or subscribe to the videocast of this program on YouTube. John Campbell, I wanted to ask you about an incident that took place just before the election. I understand that there was a very senior official in this Independent Electoral Commission who was found apparently murdered.
That's correct. And he was the person who was supposed to be responsible for the technical aspects of the transmission of the accounts. He was found murdered. there is an investigation that's ongoing about the murder, but there have been no results as yet announced. No question, the murder cast a shadow over the proceedings. And in fact, Raila Odinga has claimed that at least some of the computers used by the Electoral Commission were hacked.
Well, Catherine Harold, let me turn that to you then. Where do you see that this is going to lead us over the next couple weeks, given that Odinga has pulled out of the election? There has been some question as to whether or not the election will go forward.
I think there's still some question over whether or not the election will go forward. The election board said yesterday that the election was on and that all eight of the original candidates contested would be on the ballot. That was following a court case brought by one of the minor candidates. None of the candidates, apart from Odinga or Kenyatta, got more than 1% of the vote. But without Odinga on the ballot, the question is, how legitimate will this election be in the eyes of his supporters? And what is the opposition's plan for what to do next? Are they going to continue with these demonstrations that have seen tear gas, downtown every other day? Are they going to lodge a challenge in the courts? Are they going to change their mind and contest? Nobody really knows at this stage what's going to happen next.
And, well, Catherine, if I could just follow up for you. I mean, I think one thing that was viewed as a positive about this Supreme Court decision annulling the election was that it showed sort of a new level of independence by Kenya's judiciary that is, it's rarely seen in really most anywhere in the world.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, democracy is a process. Nowhere in the world has got perfect elections. The process is better than 2007. And I hear a lot of people talking about maybe we'll have the violence of 2007 outside of the country. But people here are not saying that to that extent. I don't think that we're at the brink of that kind of violence at this stage.
Well, Nangala Niyabola, I understand that Kenya's parliament, which is controlled by President Uhuru Kenyatta's ruling coalition, has been taking some steps to head off the Supreme Court from doing something like this again. Can you tell us about that?
Well, there's been a lot of challenges that have gone and a lot of things that have happened in the last few weeks that are cause for concern. One of the first things that President Kenyatta said right out of the gate was that he was going to, quote unquote, deal with the judiciary. And this process was over. And that sounded very much like a threat. And international civil, local and international civil society have taken it as such. He's also made significant NGO council. They've also made significant, again, what would amount to threats to the civil society in country. So two major groups that had been organizing independent tallying during the election process were threatened with deregistration. That was an illegal process. And some Maina Kiai, who was the UN Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial executions, if I'm wrong, was actually detained. He's a Kenyan. He was here for the election, and he was detained on his way to the airport. So the relationship between the Jubilee administration and civil society in Kenya is very fraught right now. And it changes the stakes in the election significantly because civil society feels very insecure right now. Will there be some kind of purge? Will there be some kind of attack on the freedom of civil society in Kenya? Certainly what we've seen since August 11th, it's not encouraging.
Well, John Campbell, back in 2007, following the electoral violence, there was a power-sharing agreement that was actually brokered where Odinga, who had been declared the loser of that presidential election, was given the newly created position of prime minister. His opponent, Mwai Kibaki, was allowed to stay as president. Might something like that happen again?
I suppose it might, but I think it would be difficult at this stage for Odinga and Kenyatta to reach any such agreement. It's interesting that there are very few signs that the two are actually talking to each other. And yet, from my perspective, to avoid violence and continued instability, it is essential that there be a dialogue between these two big men, both of whom are extremely ambitious and extremely stubborn.
And just to follow up on one point, John, because I know you worked for a long time as a diplomat, how is it that the foreign observers came out saying that this election seemed like a reasonable one. I think the European Union Observer Mission called it free, fair, and credible. I know former Secretary of State John Kerry was there as well. They didn't raise a stink about this election in the immediate aftermath. How did they get it wrong?
Actually, all nine of the major foreign observer missions gave the elections a clean bill of health. I think the basic problem is really with foreign election observers. What they tend to do is they tend to observe the actual voting that goes on polling day. They do not stay around for the ballot counting and the ballot transmission. And yet, in Africa, not just in Kenya, in Africa, where there are irregularities, that's generally where they are. It's in the consolidation and transmission of tallies from around a country to a kind of central station. That's where there are irregularities. And that is a process which the foreign observers do not observe.
Well, Catherine Harold, our time does grow short here, but if I could get you to look in your crystal ball, could you give us a little bit of forecast about what we might expect over the next 6 months or 9 months?
I think the key thing is what the opposition decides to do next. Are they going to demonstrate? Are they going to go to court? Are they going to contest? Because at the moment, it looks like the election board is determined to hold the elections. The date is 2 weeks away. Three other of the small candidates have said that they're running. So that gives the president somebody to contest against. And if Odinga decides to sit this election out and they hold it, then he's going to be running against some very, very minor candidates. And if Odinga is not competing in that election, I don't see where his political power would come from after that.
And Catherine, I don't want to leave things on too pessimistic a note. I understand that you did a lot of on-the-ground reporting on Election Day and had quite a positive view of sort of the voting process and democracy in Kenya at that time. Tell us just a little bit about some of the stories that you saw then.
Well, as Nanjala says, the problem is never on Election Day here. People queue up to vote for hours. You know, we met a 102-year-old woman who'd been queuing for 6 hours to cast her vote. We saw mothers with babies. They were actually going to the front of the queue, and some enterprising mothers rent out their babies to other people who wanted to skip the queues. But the point is, Kenyans, you know, as a population, are very, very patient and very, very good-natured on voting day. You know, it's only during the tallying process that these problems have repeatedly emerged in elections here. And that's why there was a backup system. There was the electronic transmission, and then there was the manual vote forms that were filled out, the paper forms. And part of the problem this time around was that the paper forms weren't available for people to inspect in time before they announced the official results. So people see that as a bit of a betrayal of all these patient people who waited in line to cast their votes.
Let's hope for a better outcome the next time around. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Mercy Adiambo, Catherine Harold, Nanjala Niabola, and John Campbell for joining us. Our assistant producers this week are Astrid Agopian, Jamie Dunaway, and Shannon Sankey. Lauren Wertman is our supervising producer. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.